Welcome to episode 5 of season 18 of the Growing Empire Show. Today I am back for the third time with my special guest, Nate Hare. And we are going to dive into more tax deferment strategies, building wealth, and using IRAs as the catalyst to help you fuel your real estate investments. Make sure you stay tuned.
Welcome to Growing Empires, hosted by real estate entrepreneur and trusted investment advisor, Jennifer DeJesus. Growing Empires provides insight to building wealth through passive income-producing real estate investments for those who want to build and manage a more profitable real estate portfolio.
So what type of investments fall into the term non-traditional as it relates to the IRA? Because I've heard that a million times before, the non-traditional investments. So what is that? Real estate is that, I assume?
Yeah, which is kind of weird for me because I thought owning a home, I thought home ownership was the most traditional investment on the face of the planet.
Yeah,
but it's considered a non-traditional investment when you're talking about a retirement investment.
Okay.
So it's really anything outside of Wall Street. Anything that's not publicly traded is considered an alternative investment.
Got it.
There's probably reasons they name it that because they want you to think, no, you don't want to do that. That's a non-traditional way to invest. That's an alternative investment. Well, guess what? More people nowadays understand alternative investments better than they understand why the stock market goes up and down. Because most people think it goes up and down based on emotion. How do you invest when things are based on emotion? Real estate is not necessarily an emotional thing. It's driven by supply and demand, right? So there's some fundamentals that people understand. And I think to a certain degree, most people on this planet understand what a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house is and what do you do with it if you own one, right? As a rental property, you put a renter in there. Good God. I mean, once you get into rehabs, it can get a little hairy. But as far as like what a house is and how you make money on it, most people to a certain degree understand what to do with that. So it's funny that they call that a non-traditional investment, but yeah, it's just anything outside of Wall Street is considered non-traditional.
Okay. And if we're just comparing the non-traditional versus the traditional, is there a boatload of different rules and regulations between the two, or are they generally speaking pretty similar?
So there are some rules and regulations that apply to all IRAs and all 401ks.
Okay.
And this is what we actually spend a lot of time teaching at Directed IRA, because when you start investing in alternative investments, normally you're in the private market. You're dealing with individuals. You're not dealing with the government. You're not dealing with Wall Street. You're not dealing with anything like that. So it is important to know the IRS doesn't really care what you invest in, but they do care about who your IRAs invest with. And there's a list of people called disqualified people that are not allowed to transact with the IRA. Okay. Now, the main disqualified person, if I'm talking my IRA, the main disqualified person is me. What that means is I cannot tell my IRA to buy my own crap. Right. If I've got a house, I cannot sell it to my IRA. It's a conflict of interest. I make decisions for me and I make the decision for my IRA. Who's going to tell my IRA to not buy the thing if I had the ability to sell all my stuff to my IRA? So I'm considered a disqualified person. I'm not allowed to transact with my IRA. I can't buy things from my IRA. I can't sell things to my IRA. There's other people that are equally disqualified as me, which would include my spouse. And then lineal relatives, parents, grandparents, kids and grandkids, and their spouses. So it's specific to those family members, me, spouse, parents, grandparents, kids and grandkids, and their spouses, because that's usually how wealth is passed. When you die, by default, most of your assets are going to go to your spouse or to your kids. So when you talk about IRAs, when you pass away, IRAs do not disappear. They turn into inherited IRAs. And inherited IRAs are usually inherited by the spouse or the kids. So they say if those are going to be the people that are most likely going to inherit these IRAs, they are also disqualified from transacting with that IRA. But outside of that, your IRA can transact with anybody, including the family members to the side, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews. Those are considered family to the side. So let's say I've got money in my Roth IRA. My brother is a real estate investor. Could I loan money out of my IRA to my brother? The answer is yes. Can I loan money out of my IRA to my son? The answer is no, because he's a disqualified person. So there is some restrictions on that. And those are the same restrictions Fidelity has. You just never have to talk about it because there's no opportunity for you to invest in the private market through a Fidelity IRA.
Okay. So I've also heard their term checkbook IRA. What is that?
So checkbook IRA, and we touched on it just briefly, but I'll circle back on it. When we talk about checkbook IRA, it's really checkbook IRA LLC.
They're one in the same. Okay, got it.
It's the one in the same, right? So really what checkbook control means is whether or not I, as the IRA owner, have access to the checkbook for my retirement plan. Now, the only way to get this access to the checkbook, if I have an IRA, is setting up an LLC, okay? And we can do this, our law firm does this all the time. We set up an LLC first, okay? We figure out if we want our IRA or IRAs to be owners of this LLC. If I just have one IRA, it would be considered a single member LLC, the owner being the IRA. A lot of our clients use these LLCs because they've got 12 or 14 accounts.
Sure.
And they don't want to invest 12 or 14 accounts separately. They would rather invest them all into one multi-member LLC where all 12 accounts own the LLC. And then they have all the money in one bank account. That's the bank account for the LLC. And here's where the checkbook control comes in. You're the manager of the LLC and you have access to the bank account. Now, very, very important. You have to be responsible with this type of structure because there's no line of sight now from your custodian to see what you're doing with the LLC and with the bank account. So you have to make sure if you're going to manage this checkbook IRA LLC, that all of the money has to be for the benefit of the plans that own the LLC. You can't take money out to yourself and go to Vegas. You can't use it for personal use. You can't take the LLC and go buy your stuff. It doesn't make prohibited transactions go away. So you have to be very responsible in how you use it. And I would probably say not everybody should have one. The responsible people should have one. And you don't need one for every investment. For instance, I just do promissory notes to real estate investors, which is a very easy, not a lot of moving parts type of investment, right? We get a promissory note. I lend money to, you know, Bob, the real estate investor. Bob, the real estate investor, pays interest payments back to my IRA. I don't need an LLC to do that. But let's say that I've got 12 different accounts and we're going to do a flip. And there's going to be a heavy rehab and there's going to be a lot of different contractors that have to be paid, electricians and so forth. Well, if I do that investment through my IRA custodian, I got to request checks from my IRA custodian every time I got to pay a bill. So it might be kind of onerous for me to do that. But if I take those IRAs and first invest in an LLC that's got a bank account, I can just pay those expenses with a checkbook from that bank account. Right, I can pay contractors, I can send wires, I can do this, I can buy paint. So if my investment has multiple moving parts, the IRA LLC might help. If I'm investing with multiple accounts, the IRA LLC might help. But if I'm just doing a simple investment like into a syndication or buying some cryptocurrency, I probably don't need a checkbook IRA LLC. But that's what the checkbook IRA LLC is. It's just an LLC owned by IRAs, where the owner of the IRA has the checkbook because they're the manager of the LLC.
Okay. And I assume you can't use LLCs that are already created, right? You'd have to set up something new if you were going to do LLC with your IRA.
Yeah. If I have an existing LLC that I use for my personal investments, I cannot use that LLC for my IRA investments because really that LLC is an extension of myself. I own it, right? I might own it with the spouse. So by definition, the LLC is also a disqualified person. My IRA can't transact with it. But when we set up a checkbook IRA LLC from the beginning, what we're really doing is we're setting up an LLC that has no shareholders. The first shareholders are the IRAs once we invest those IRAs into the LLC. So we're not doing a prohibited transaction when we set up an LLC from scratch and have the IRAs be the first owners of that LLC. So yeah, so you can't use existing LLCs that you own personally and dump your IRA funds into those. But if you need the IRA-owned LLC, just talk to us. We'll get you with our law firm and we'll start one from scratch.
The episode will continue in just a moment.
As an investor, we know it's important to stay on top of market trends and real estate opportunities that add value to your portfolio. We also know that having a trusted source of reliable information to help you stay a step ahead of other investors is critical to your success. If you're interested in having these types of resources, as well as access to me and my team, I invite you to join the Empire Investment Club, a free service that gives you an easier way to make sense of today's and tomorrow's real estate opportunities. As a member of the Empire Investment Club, you'll get access to relevant resources and investment-focused experiences such as live interactive webinars, market trend presentations, and investor socials designed to equip you with what you need to succeed. So whether you're an active investor, passive investor, a combination of both, or just starting out, the club is where you'll get what you need to build a portfolio you love. To join, just head over to jenniferdejesus.com, sign up, and we'll see you in the club, where everyone's on a journey to becoming a better investor.
So I'd like to really jump into now, like really how to supercharge these IRAs, right? Like how to really go and get the greatest bang for your buck with some of these strategies. So you talked a little bit about notes, and that really was intriguing to me because I feel like when we're looking to expand and we're looking to like really grow our wealth, right? It sounded to me like, you know, traditionally people would put money into their IRAs, they would build it up to the age 59, right, or beyond. And the goal from whatever age you are to the age 59, to me, would be build it as large as you can build it, right? So you're buying investments, you're putting as much money as you can in, you're making as many contributions as you can physically make, right? But then you're also doing other things. You're then buying real estate with it. You're doing notes with it. So give me some of the like tips on, you know, how you supercharge these IRAs. Like, what are some of the strategies? Is it just really through like the notes and the real estate, or are there really some other methods that people can supercharge those IRAs?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of methods. I mean, when you look at it, I mean, there's, you know, probably a variety of really good syndications out there, apartment buildings where people are, you know, driving value, they're doing value add investments, and you want to be a passive investor in those investments. That could be a good way to supercharge your IRA. The other good thing about that type of investment is it's not like you're going to take your retirement plan and go buy an apartment building on your own. Right? Because you need $30 million to go buy an apartment building. But when you have these investment sponsors that are pooling money together, they might be pooling money from 100 different people that have IRAs. And now you're using what's called economies of scale, right? You pull 100 different IRAs together. Well, now we can buy this apartment building and we might buy it for $30 million, but we could do a value add strategy, push the value to $50 million and all the investors get paid. So that's kind of a way that you can think about it that way is when you're pooling IRAs together to buy something bigger than you could buy on your own. That's one way to supercharge your IRA. There's other types of, I would say, and I'll stick with real estate here before I get to notes. There's other types of creative strategies that exist out there that can also be applied to your IRA. So if you have any seasoned real estate investors that are, let's say, buying property with seller financing, buying property subject to underlying financing, those strategies can be applied to an IRA. But there's nothing stopping an IRA from taking over the mortgage payments of somebody else's house, right, in exchange of getting that property titled. And that's a common concept called buying subject to. I'll give you a quick example of a client that actually did this very, very well, did this successfully. A client of mine had about $70,000 in an old 401k. He worked at Motorola. He rolled that 401k into a traditional IRA. Okay, we're talking 70 grand. Okay, he knew he was already in his 50s. He knew he had to get creative with this money because he was not going to retire on $70,000. So first, what he did is he first did a Roth conversion. Okay, he said, if I'm going to grow this money, I don't want to pay tax on the money I grow it to because I'm going to grow this aggressively through my knowledge as a real estate investor. So he paid taxes on the 70 to convert that traditional to a Roth. Now he's got a self-directed Roth with $70,000 in it. He went around and he started looking for properties in Texas where owners were in distressed situations. They lost their jobs. They couldn't pay their mortgage payments. They couldn't pay their property taxes and they were getting foreclosed on. So he went out and he said, hey, I can buy your property. I can catch up the mortgage payments. I can give you some cash for keys, and I'll even take care of the mortgage going forward. Okay. If you allow me to buy this property with the financing still in place, we're not going to pay off the, we're not going to pay off the bank. I'll pay them off through monthly payments and I'll get this property rented for you and stop the foreclosure. So on that specific type of deal, you only need to come in with, say, $10,000, $15,000 to catch up the mortgage payments, you know, clean up whatever needs to be cleaned up, give the owner cash for keys, and you get property title to, in this case, his Roth IRA. His Roth IRA was the buyer in all these properties. Now, some people say, well, why would people give up equity? These people had no equity. They were negative on their property. They couldn't sell the property because they had no equity in these properties. But he was thinking of this long term, that as long as he can, his Roth IRA could buy these properties with only $10,000 to $15,000 of capital, and then he can just have his property manager rent it long term, he can have the notes paid off by the renters and his Roth IRA would own the property free and clear 15 years down the road. Now, he did this and repeated it five times. Okay. Today, he has five investment properties that are all paid off. These are all in Austin, Texas, and they roughly appraise at about $700,000 a piece. So with a $70,000 Roth IRA, through his creative strategy of taking property subject to, he grew his Roth IRA to a $4 million Roth IRA just by applying that creative strategy. That's a way to accelerate massively the growth of a retirement plan because he used leverage. He used leverage. Another thing is when we talk about notes, you know, notes are really fun, at least for me, because when you're looking to lend money to another real estate investor, the cool thing about it is it's a relationship business and you negotiate the terms with your borrower. So I actually can negotiate what my IRA is supposed to be paid, when it's supposed to be paid, and how long it's supposed to be paid for. There's no other investment on this planet that's that predictable to me, because I could tell the, and this is normally what I get on my notes, I get 12% annually on the money that I loan out, and I get 2 points up front. So really, well, I'm getting 14% return on my money. Now, I structure these notes in a way that also allows me to compound my interest, because I don't do 30-year mortgages to these investors. I do 6 to 18-month loans, loans that will help them acquire the property. And then usually they sell the property and I get paid my principal back, or they refinance it, refinance my loan with a conventional bank loan. So the power in that is I'm not only making 14%, but I'm able to compound my interest annually at 14%. And if you just looked at the numbers, if you start with $100,000 and you compound 14% for 20 years, that $100,000 turns into $1.4 million without a single additional contribution out of my pocket. All interest payments and the way that I structure my notes as short term. So Einstein said it best, the eighth wonder of the world is compounding interest. If you can understand how to compound interest in a tax-free Roth IRA, bam, that's a life-changing event right there to your retirement plan.
Let's just navigate just that topic for one more second, just to really explain it. I mean, obviously, everybody's heard the words compounding interest, but what does it actually mean and how are you eligible to even do that?
So what compounding interest means is I am, let's say that I'm loaning up, you know, $100,000 out, but I'm due to be paid back my interest and principal in 12 months, okay? So I loan $100,000 out, I make 14%, I get $114,000 back. By compounding my interest, I get it back all in year one, and then my next investment, I'm not making a $100,000 investment, I'm making a $114,000 investment, okay? The net, I make up 14% on $114,000. So compounding means I get my interest back and my principal, and I'm reinvesting my interest. Most people can't do that because if you're just investing in a stock and you're just holding it, you're not compounding interest. You're just taking it from X price and hoping to sell it at a higher price. If you're doing longer term loans, like, you know, I would never do a 30-year mortgage to anybody because I never get to compound my interest. At a certain point, inflation is going to start kicking my butt because my interest rate's locked and I don't get to reinvest my interest. So compounding interest just means the effect of me getting my principal and interest back and then reinvesting my interest. The faster I can do it, the larger the compounding effect has.
Awesome. Thank you for listening to episode 5 with my special guest, Nate Hare. This was the third episode of our four-part segment. If you missed episode 4 or episode 5 of season 18, where I talked in great detail with Nate, you definitely want to make sure that you go back and check out those recordings. Nate will be back for one more time on our upcoming episode. So make sure you stay tuned. And until next time, take care.
For more information about how Jennifer can help you plan, develop, and manage a strong real estate investment portfolio, visit growingempires.com.